hard time identifying with this film because, like,
you're not a bear.
Well, no, Leonardo DiCaprio survives everything. I think, like, if
he survives an attack by both a grizzly bear and a giant tree.
I think it
and
I
was an iceberg.
I was expecting a meteor to hit him at some point. Me, I put one foot in the snow and I die of exposure.
I was really disappointed because I thought this was going to be his character from The Wolf of Wall Street being fed to a bear by his ex-wives.
That would have been an interesting film.
I would have paid for it.
This is definitely Leo going, give me the fucking Oscar!
He's just like, look, if you just give me the fucking naked bald guy, I will fucking fight this bear.
He's like, I either have to do an accent or be, like, disabled somehow. So I'm gonna choose...
And he started out his career playing a retarded kid, so, like, he's already fucked that pooch.
No, wasn't he on a sitcom?
Yes, that's right. He was on Growing Pains before he was in Gilbert Grape.
Oh, I know my Tiger Beat biography of Leonardo DiCaprio from 1995.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about Leonardo DiCaprio and the terrible, horrible, not very good at all day.
A series of really, really unfortunate events.
It's kind of an American epic that will remind you that the great outdoors is beautiful and will do everything it can to kill you.
Yeah, at first I was like, I want to go camping. But then I was like, never, never do I want to go camping.
Indoors for
another reminder
of
how much the past sucks.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
And let's face it, white men.
Yeah. Although, let's, you know, Ed, the one thing in this movie is everybody still has good teeth. What the fuck's up with that?
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that Leo's like, okay, yeah, so I hear you got to ugly yourself up to get the Oscar, right? Oh, yeah, sure, we're going to cover you with scars and it'll be gross.
All right,
he's
cool.
Still better looking than all of us put together. Even covered with, like, open, gaping wounds, you're like, you're still date a supermodel.
Well, let's face it, the bear is better looking than all of us put together. That was the bear, everyone.
I think that. And it was, I had my money down on it, and sure enough, the bear is nearly the only chick in this movie.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess she is.
Well,
yeah,
not if you use the word chick.
Uh-oh, yes. Don't set her off.
I'm sorry.
I'm fine.
I'm a beautiful lady goddess.
By the way, I'm Chris.
JC.
Bo.
Sarah.
Richard.
And we are, as Richard said, reviewing The Revenant. One of the big Oscar hopes for this year, and just in general, like, hey, I need one last really great film before the end of the year.
Then the Academy is going to, like, it's going to want to thrust itself inside this thing like a hollow horse.
That's an odd analogy,
it is an odd analogy. Why would you come up with that? And yet... remember, when Leonardo DiCaprio comes out of the horse corpse in this, there's going to be 6 more weeks of winter.
This is directed by Alejandro Iñárritu, who last year did Birdman, which kind of swept the Oscars.
Which swept the Oscars. And they're like, you know, this movie's full of white dudes and, you know, breathtaking cinematography. And it's just, like, ethereal and woo-woo enough to make you think it's high art, so they're really going to like it.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think in terms of cinematography, it's very much for high art. You know, I mean, there's some shots in this film that are, like, jaw-dropping.
Yeah. Where was this shot?
I think around Yellowstone, Yosemite
Canada.
Area, somewhere like that. In Canada.
It was all on a stage in Los Angeles.
Some place that we haven't strip mined.
Yet.
Yeah, I mean, the film itself was beautiful. Those shots were amazing. How did they get the snow that perfect? Was that...
It just does it on its own.
CGI? What?
Yeah, it just falls and lays there.
See, where I'm
gorgeous.
From, snow is just gray and ugly.
Okay. Yeah, no. When you go where there aren't a bunch of buildings and people, it tends to be kind of pretty.
Oh.
Except for when it's covered with human blood.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which is
still kind of pretty.
Which happens a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Basically, he is... Leo plays... Hugh Glass, who is a frontiersman in the 1820s.
Hugh Jass?
I was going to say, he had a first name.
Stop calling me Glass.
Who is like the scout for a party that is out...
They're fur traders. They're on the the edge of the frontier. So the frontier of the frontier, if you will. And
the final frontier.
The final frontier, except not with, with snappy Cuban heels. And they are it starts out with the, you know, they've got a big camp full of dudes, and they've been getting all these hairy dudes, and they've been getting animal pelts, and they're about to ship it upriver to their to the fort where they will trade the pelts for money back north. Or back east. And all of a sudden, whoops, Indians.
Yep. Indians out of fucking nowhere.
Native Americans who are understandably pissed off.
Yeah, riding llamas. No, riding
I thought they were just the stuff of legends and myth.
No, I do like that they took the time at one point to say, like, well, what the fuck do you expect, white man?
Yeah, he's like, you've taken everything from us, so fuck you.
Well, basically, everything goes in a very, total chaos with one of the most beautiful shots in the movie to lead this out, which reminded me in a way of the beginning of like Saving Private Ryan.
I was about to say Private Ryan, except with cowboys and Indians.
Let's give some real credit here to Emmanuel Lubezki, as whose cinematography here is quite stellar. But I mean, this is Terrence Malick's go-to guy.
Yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón's go-to guy. Like, you know, but that opening sequence is we were discussing this on the way here that Saving Private Ryan, you feel it's just a camera strapped to somebody in the middle of all this action, and it has this viscerality. This is swirling, amazing cinematography in the middle of a freezing swamp in the middle of winter, and you're like, I don't even know how you move the camera like that in this environment. Yeah. It was really
Joe Carnahan, who directed The Grey, must have watched this and go, this is bullshit.
Fuck you guys.
And dress warm when you see this, because you won't feel warm once.
Do not buy a large soda before you see this, because this is 2 hours, 37 minutes. It doesn't feel it. But
it is.
And there's a lot of running water.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of, and they're, you know, and freezing running water that they're running through, and yeah, like my testicles are still lodged up near my heart.
Well, I'm saying that opening sequence, one of the things that's so interesting about it is that it goes into shots that you don't know how they did without a crane.
Yeah.
And yet you're like, there's no way. It keeps going 360 and right over the area. There was no crane.
It's all
how
drones.
How they get those shots?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was drones. I don't know. Could have been. But anyway, so they survived. Some of them survived that, only for Leo to get in a fight with a bear.
Rule number one, don't bring a knife to a bear fight.
Wait, are you referring to Tom Hardy? Because I think he's more of an otter.
No. He comes later.
Okay.
Yeah, Tom Hardy's just one of their party who's like the dick of the party.
He's the dick of the party, and yeah, from the get, he's like, everything that Leonardo DiCaprio says to the scout, he's like, no, fuck that, we should do the exact opposite, and, you know, of course, Leo keeps them more or less from getting killed.
Sometimes you just don't like people at work, and you can never get them to agree with you, so you just try to kill them.
I feel like you're projecting a little bit.
Was that a long day by any chance?
I'm praying to God you're not projecting about me.
He ends up mauled to the point where he cannot take care of himself and will probably die, but yes. Half-Indian son is there, like, no matter what, I'm saying.
And the officer leading the troop.
Donald Gleason.
Yeah,
half First Nation son.
Yeah,
he's horny before we get the letters of complaint. Which is actually made... it's one of the nice things is they actually use... You know, they talk about the Pawnee and the Ree, which are two tribes within the First Nations, but aren't talked about much in cinema, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I was like, huh.
Well, unless, unlike a lot of...
I'm just throwing Cherokee and Arapaho at
everybody. And they're like, and those damn Sioux. Am I right, everybody?
They're, unlike a lot of Westerns, which this essentially is, this is taking place antebellum. It's before the Civil War. It's, you know, roughly 1830s, 1840s. And so, no six shooters, guys. Everybody's using muskets, and you get one shot. So, you know, it makes the bear fight interesting.
Hold still while I reload.
There's that point where, like...
No backs.
Like, during the bear fight, like... Like, first, there's nothing you can do. The bear's just like, I see you, jump on him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But then you're like, okay, the bear bought the whole playing dead thing.
Stay down.
Don't shoot it in the face.
Don't shoot it in the face. It's just going to piss the thing off. It's like six times your size.
Yeah. And that whole sequence, if anybody has seen Grizzly Man, you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
This is bringing back some horrible memories.
And there's like, you know, there are just a couple of scenes in this where you feel like you're watching that Simpsons episode where he falls into the ravine. It's like, oh god, oh god.
No, actually, it was more like, considering, you know, Leo's position at that point, it's more like the Simpsons episode where Homer is trying to barbecue the pig, and it gets catapulted. It's still good. Piggy's gone, Dad. Piggy's gone.
It ends up on a sort of a Jack London survival film, really. Tom Hardy is paid to take care of him and then tries to kill him and his son. And,
don't ever pay Tom Hardy to take care of anything, not even goldfish.
No. Okay. Well, maybe in the post-apocalyptic world, then, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He makes a great tripod for a gun, I'm just saying.
But most of this is Leo tromping through improbable situations.
It's interspersed, and like the first movie they filmed of this called Man in the Wilderness, it jumps back and forth between like what's happening to the guys that have essentially left him behind and Leo trying to, you know, like make his way with not much. I mean, he's got shit that he can start a fire with and the clothes on his back, and that's about it.
And a giant bear pelt.
And a lot of scars.
Yeah. That's something I kind of had a problem with in this film. I feel like it would have been better if we just saw Leo, and it would have been a lot shorter, too.
Yeah.
But the whole, like, you know, about a third of the film is about Tom Hardy and the young boy.
Will Poulter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Going back to the fort and then, like, a little bit at the fort and stuff like that, and it's like, I feel like we should keep Tom Hardy kind of outside of this realm of any type of human. If Leonardo DiCaprio eventually stumbles across him and kills him, it would have a bigger impact than this, like, subplot that they had that I feel like they didn't need. It's like, yeah, Tom Hardy tried to kill him. Yeah. Is a douchebag.
There's a lot of weird subplot here.
I like that, because that wasn't the subplot I had trouble with, because there is a second subplot, which is, like, so horribly coincidental and then fortuitous that you're like, really?
It's very overwrought, and they bring it out, you know, they bring it out swinging in, like, one of the very first scenes, and you're like, oh, well, this is foreshadowing.
This will
some
pay,
sort.
This will pay off. No, yes. I mean, I liked the Tom Hardy stuff because it made it into a very slow, epic chase movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. this is basically, you know, put it in Cars and it's 5 minutes of bullet, but this is really, you know, I liked the fact that, you know, there isn't even an inevitability because they're in a large... in a large space where they may come across each other, and it depends on the fact that he is a tracker.
It's like watching
not
two...
just randomly out there. He is trying to hunt him down, and there's moments where you're reminded of that this is a guy who really knows what he's doing and is not dead for a reason.
It's like watching two World War II vets circa now, like, in a nursing home, and they can only move a couple of inches every
it's
second.
It's almost like Cockneys versus Zombies, where there's the moment where one of the retirees on a Zimmer frame is kind of walking across, and the zombie's like, ugh! It's like this two-minute joke sequence where it's like, well, one of you is going to get across the room before the other. I'm not quite sure how, who.
And then you have a weird hallucination.
Yeah.
There are a couple hallucination sequences here that I found to be a little on the banal side, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do a lot of, like, him, like, he's trying to revenge his son, basically. And so there's a lot of, like, dreams and hallucinations of him with his dead wife floating over him. And it comes across a little on the corny side.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the stuff, when they really get into the, oh, yeah, this is about revenge sequences, feels a little frayed at the edge, a little cliched, especially towards the very end.
Oh,
those dream sequences looked like they were going to end with Matthew McConaughey trying to send me a car.
Yeah.
They were not just cheesy, they were ill-considered.
I felt like it's, you know, kind of Iñárritu doing his, you know, this is my, hey, floating people, that's my signature move. Yeah. It's like Shane Black and Christmas.
Yeah, I feel like,
all right.
Yeah, I feel like those dream sequences and the moment, then that subplot at the end, it's kind of, it serves the purpose of kind of sort of not having enough faith in Leo. And I think it sort of does him a disservice, because I think in the end, when people watch this, like, it seems like the whole point from his point of view is for him to get his Oscar. And I feel like Iñárritu didn't trust him enough to, like, let it, because like Sarah said, it could have been mostly him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like too many times the movie bails itself out. It's like, well, we need a supply here because people are getting tired of just seeing this. And that's,
I agree.
Because he's not selling it. Like, I don't know.
They didn't have enough faith that Leo could carry the film essentially by himself, which he probably couldn't. There's something about Leo that when it's just him on screen for a certain stretch of time, I kind of get sick of looking at him. I don't know why. It's like
Is it his beautiful eyes?
Probably. I get so
lost.
But I feel like
you must paint him.
I must, like, one of his French girls.
Wait.
I feel like there's not enough emotion in the rest of his face. Like, his eyes are fine, but he doesn't do enough with the rest of his body. I might be alone in thinking this, but it's not enough. And that's probably why what's going to end up happening is Tom Hardy's going to get Best Supporting Actor
yeah,
for this.
I know.
Because he did the best dead eyes I've ever seen on screen. There's a moment where he's, like, recalling something.
Oh, Jesus. And yeah, his eyes, heartwarming story about his father.
Yeah, his eyes are dead. Fucking dead.
I mean, I don't share your problem with Leo myself. I'm a big Leo fan. But
so
I think
you think
this
he does plenty with his body?
yeah.
I wasn't paying that much
I heard
attention.
He doesn't do enough with his body, just saying.
I've heard
you just want more of Leo's body moving.
Not that body. Not
I've
now.
Heard he's got dad body.
Oh, he lost a lot of weight for this,
yes.
though. He's got his What's Eating Gilbert Grape body.
The thing is, I think that you're right, JC, though. Like, Inarritu,
the answer
feels
is,
like
is
the other sequences are unnecessary because they feel like Leo can't carry this, and I feel like he could.
Yeah.
I mean, the scenes you're liking the most in this tend to be the ones where you're just, it's just quiet, and you're watching him fucking survive, and going, yeah, I'd be so dead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there have been a couple of, like, you know, the thing that Robert Redford did last year, where he's on the boat, and just alone, and there have been a couple of things like that have been effective when you're just, especially when you're in such an epic setting, and yeah, sometimes this movie really kind of, it doesn't collapse, but there's a lot of trappings and mumbo jumbo that really not that necessary.
Yeah.
Did anybody else notice that Lucas Haas was in this?
I did.
Which one was he? I knew he
one
was.
One of the beardy guys.
Yeah, one of the beardy guys, because now he is all of a sudden 55 years old. I'm like, when did that happen? Yeah. He had like a gray beard. Yeah, it was weird.
Well, he's, like, what? He's about, you know, in his 40s at least.
Oh, man, that's
so
sad.
He's a little younger than that, I thought. really?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 45, and I was a full-grown adult when Witness came out, more or less. He was just a tiny little tiny.
No, you weren't.
Well, because
I was 15. That's close enough.
15. Yeah, you were grown up in the Jewish sense.
In the frontier land, you'd be skinning beavers at that point.
I'd be lucky to still be alive.
You'd probably have a family of 10.
Yeah.
That's because for a long time, he was the same age he always was in Mars Attacks. And that's kind of why he's
that's
like,
true.
Now he's like a 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
One day we'll all be 50-year-old men.
He is 39, for the record.
That might as well be 50.
Yeah.
Same thing. After 35, everything else is downhill.
That's true.
He's got big ears, I'll tell you that much.
Well, when you turn 50, you get your official patriarchy badge. So, that's good.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Start with Beau.
Yeah, pretty much, like, there's some very epic feels to this movie. It's gorgeous. It's got a lot of scope. And... you know, surprisingly, for as overlong as it is, it does manage to be very engaging. But yeah, as JC brought up, there's a lot of stuff here that doesn't necessarily need to be here, which, you know, if it was going to be in there, I wish it was more fully realized. And a lot of the more mystical stuff, and especially there's a subplot with the Native Americans that feels very hackneyed and tacked on. And in the end, it doesn't completely fall apart, but there's a little chintzy bit that you're like, really? So, all things being told, yeah, I mean, I would definitely check this out at a matinee price, if nothing else. There's definitely going to be a lot of Oscar buzz about it. But in the end, I'm probably only going to give it about, 7 stashed pelts out of 10.
JC?
I feel like it's kind of a disservice to Birdman to say, like, it was a gimmick film because it was just, like, you know, the long takes and everything. But, you know, he had his idea for it and he stuck with it. And with this, it just felt like there was too many different ideas. There might have been maybe too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, I know the cinematographer he shot with has been in a lot of great movies, like Richard talked about. He's shot a lot of great movies, so it might have been he had his own ideas for different things. It never felt like all one person's idea, the way Birdman was kind of like a central, you know, a centralized idea and theme. So this is too wishy-washy. There was too many, you know, things thrown in. It just sort of didn't feel like it was all there. Sadly, I don't think this is going to be Leo's statue.
He's going to sadly clap in the audience. Yeah.
The camera only shows him this year. Yeah. It doesn't show the winner. Keep it together, Leo.
His next attempt at the Oscar is going to be called Forever Alone.
No, yeah. He might win an Oscar for not breaking down in tears this year at the Oscars.
Well done. Yeah. Well done, sir.
But yeah, overall, I mean, yeah, this might be kind of the last big awards movie before, like, Star Wars hits in a couple of weeks, so I don't know how many more of these there are, so I don't know if award season has been a bust for me or not, but, I mean, with this one, I'd give it, like, 6.5 Fallen Horses out of 10.
Oh!
Yeah, I know.
The horses.
Sarah, would you like to opine on this?
Would I like to what now?
Oh, I'm sorry, opine. I said equine. Opine?
Yeah. Equine?
Why are you bringing up the pine nay. Tree again?
Nay. Nay. I think this could
sorry,
have been...
Around.
This could have been a perfect 10 movie. There is a perfect 10 movie in there. It's certainly shot like one. I feel like I have to give this two separate ratings. One rating simply for the directing and cinematography and Tom Hardy and his dead eyes, which I'm in love with. And I'm going to give 10, let me think, 10 dead eyes out of 10 dead eyes for the look of the film. Now, for the plot and for Leo and for all the like little subplots in there, it really killed it. It and especially the end. Especially the little surprise reveal at the end. It just ruined the story for me. I'm not a huge fan of revenge films anyway. And this was a film using a minority character mm-hmm. for the white man to get revenge. And I think if the casting had been different... i.e. if they cast a Native American actor in Leo's role, it would have been a different story, and it would have been a better story, and it would have had more meaning. But, you know, we have to kill off Native Americans and rape women to, you know, yeah. bolster the white man's ego.
Wait, a Native American scalp? Surely that couldn't ever have happened.
No! Sacagawea, never, whatever.
Well, they would have just cast a Mexican anyway, and you know that.
It would have been Danny Trejo.
Or a Jew. So I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 tears from a Native American.
No.
Who actually is an out-of-work Italian actor.
who actually loved Native American culture.
Paradise yeah, Coast.
I know,
Biggie.
I know.
I mean, let's be honest. unlike you, I love revenge films. And for me, the great standard is always going to be High Plains Drifter, which has this same combination of epic and metaphysical... And does it in a fraction of the time and leaves you feeling much bleaker and less hopeful about humanity by the end of it, which is what we're trying to do. This isn't it's beautifully shot. If there was an Oscar for location scouting, I think nothing else is going to beat it. It should have beaten it this year. I like Hardy an awful lot in this. I like DiCaprio an awful lot in this. And to a certain degree, I was actually looking at it going, would have been really interesting to have them the other way around and to cast them in each other's parts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yes. Hardy as this guy who has just been out in the wilderness for years and just, all he wants to do now is kill some fucker. And DiCaprio is the weaselly little shitbag. But he was probably running away from that because he did it so well in Django Unchained. You know, I think the problem now is that we're going to have two snowbound revenge westerns this year. Hateful Eight is just around the corner, and You know, I have a funny feeling that that's the one people are going to remember in 5 years' time, and this is going to fall by the wayside, because I think Inarritu did not... I've always had problems with him as director. I think Birdman is almost the exception in his career. I think he's too on the nose a lot of the time, and I think this is way too on the nose. At the point where he actually tries to throw a mountain at DiCaprio, I'm like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Oh, and that was just a tease. That's kind of, you know, it's 2.5 hours of misery acting. Everybody brings their A game for it, but it's still pivotally flawed. I am going to give this 6 frost encrusted mustaches out of 10.
I will agree with your point with the Inarritu. I think all his films are good, but the only great thing he ever did was Birdman. Everything else is like, oh yeah, I think I did see that. And I think this is actually going to be one of those films, because the real star of this film is the cinematography, Emmanuel Lubezki, who does work usually with people like Malick, who I can't stand. Can't stand Darren Malick. It's like, tell me a fucking story if it's going to be 3 hours long. It's got to be like more than just pretty shots.
Philistine.
And at least Inarritu is telling us a story I'm interested in. I, too, really love a good revenge film. But it's the revenge aspect of this that's less interesting than just the man versus nature aspect.
Especially, they almost completely sabotaged at the end. And it's why did you do that?
Oh, yeah, can I point out that this film needs to stop literally 5 seconds before it did.
Yeah.
Because they were horrible. there was a final 5 seconds of the film where I'm like, I actually want to punch somebody else.
I think the point that Leonardo DiCaprio did stare into the camera and say, ladies and gentlemen of the Academy for your consideration, was a little bit on the nose.
Or because I'm Deadpool.
Oh, shit! I didn't see that coming!
I think most of my problems with this would just be nitpicking if this wasn't 2 hours and 37 minutes long.
Yeah.
As it is, it's unnecessary filler of a film that definitely shouldn't have been this long, but you can still enjoy this for the acting, which is so good, which is, like I said, the cinematography, which is just going to take your breath away over and over and over and over again throughout this film. I actually really enjoyed this, but the whole time I did keep thinking, God, this could be so much better.
Yep.
And that's a shame. I still give it 8 out of 10 haunted stares by Leo into the camera.
God, that was so awkward, though.
Yes.
It didn't make sense, breaking the fourth wall like that. The film was so... Like, one really good thing I think I can give this is that you really did feel like you were there and freezing your ass off. And that little moment just broke it.
You know what would have been better to end it with?
A fart?
Jazz hands.
Oh.